طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر، من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر. تسكله ماسا لون وطن، تسكله ماسا لون وطن نفقا لعودة.
Good morning, everyone. And welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham and continued in his memory by a group of his colleagues. This is John Roberts. This morning we begin by talking about boycott, divestment, and sanctions, BDS, which continues to build up momentum in the United States. Both the Methodist Church and the Presbyterian Church USA have taken up the issue of seeking to have their investment committees divest from companies which support, in some way, Israel's occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. The General Board of Pension and Health Benefits of the United Methodist Church, which manages an investment portfolio of over $20 billion, has instructed its investment manager to sell immediately all shares in the company G4S, due in part to concerns about the company's involvement in human rights violations in the Israeli prison system and the military occupation of Palestinian territories. According to David Wildman, United Methodist Executive Secretary for Human Rights and Racial Justice at the General Board of Global Ministries, this is the first time that a United Methodist general agency has included human rights violations related to Israel's illegal settlements and military occupation in a decision to divest from a company. We celebrate this strong human rights message, both to G4S specifically and to other companies whose business operations support long-standing human rights abuses against Palestinians. In addition, the church agency has placed a moratorium on any future purchase of G4S, the world's largest security company with operations in over 120 countries, until a new investment screen is implemented that addresses human rights violations such as those by the Israeli Defense Forces against Palestinians. On Friday, June 20th, the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church USA voted to divest from key U.S. corporations complicit in the Israeli military occupation of Palestine. The Presbyterian Church has been studying the issue of divestment for years, and at the last General Assembly 2 years ago, the vote to divest narrowly lost. This year, it won. The campaign to divest was intense. Even young people in the Ida refugee camp in Bethlehem were aware of the vote and scrawled messages to the church delegates on the separation wall adjacent to their camp. One reads, "Freedom is a human right. Presbyterian Church, please divest." Another, "Palestinians are human beings. Presbyterians, divest. Another message on the wall. Believe in freedom. Presbyterians, please divest. The art messages in these pictures were created by youth organizers from the Ida refugee camp in North Bethlehem and in collaboration with the Al-Rawad Cultural and Theater Society. Since 2005, Ida refugee camp has been surrounded by a solid separation wall. Of the 5,000 members of this refugee camp, 66% are children. Al-Rawad was founded to foster beautiful resistance in this community, where hope is hard to find. Al-Rawad leaders say they don't want kids to end up in Israeli prisons or as martyrs or being stereotyped in the media. When the current Pope, Pope Francis, visited Bethlehem last month, he made a surprise stop to pray at the separation wall between the West Bank and Israel. Photos of his gesture of acknowledgement of this huge concrete barrier to peace and freedom went around the world. Inspired by the graffiti on the wall imploring, "Pope Francis, we need someone to speak about justice. Bethlehem looks like the Warsaw Ghetto." Local and international activists added a new message to the wall, imploring the Presbyterian Church to stop financing the destructive, inhumane policies of the occupation. The Presbyterian Church is currently invested in Caterpillar, which sells tractors to the Israeli military that are used in home demolitions. Israeli military tractors recently invaded a sustainable Palestinian farm called Tent of Nations, located just up the hill from Bethlehem, and destroyed over 1,500 fruit trees, claiming these trees were planted on state land. Tent of Nations is owned by a Christian Palestinian family that welcomes people of all faiths to join in cultivating the land together and working for a just peace. At the entrance of their farm is a stone which says, "We refuse to be enemies." Well, more accurately, the entrance to their farm has been blocked by large boulders placed by the Israeli military to try to strangle their fertile farmlands. And up the road from the roadblock is this stone proclaiming friendship with all, despite all the odds. Another stone quotes the Psalms, "Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity." But how can the people of Palestine and Israel dwell together in unity when they are systematically segregated? The Presbyterian Church is invested in Hewlett-Packard, which provides biometric ID equipment to monitor and segregate Palestinians. The West Bank is sliced by over 613 checkpoints. In fact, the tomb of Rachel, the matriarch, is not even accessible from Bethlehem because of the separation wall and checkpoints. And finally, the Presbyterian Church is also invested in Motorola Solutions, which sells surveillance equipment used to protect illegal Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian land in the West Bank. From the Church of the Nativity, looking down over the hills into the valleys, the view is breathtakingly beautiful. Well, as long as you can see between the large paved settlement blocks to what remains of fertile, wild Palestinian land. The small villages, such as Nilin near Bethlehem, are constantly being encroached upon by expanding settlements that threaten to strangle the last remaining indigenous Christians in the land. Divestment isn't taking sides. It's abstaining from gross violation of human rights. It's withdrawing from the destruction of the West Bank and Gaza and its people. It's listening to the oppressed and responding with moral action. Divestment was the just thing to do, and the Presbyterians did it last Friday. They voted to divest from U.S. companies that support the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. And now a local story about something special happening in Boston. Perhaps you have seen the pro-Palestinian ads in the State Street station of the MBTA. The ad campaign was launched by Ads Against Apartheid, a local Boston-based nonprofit organization. The ads are currently running in Boston's downtown State Street station, where they can be seen by upwards of 13,000 riders per day. Ads Against Apartheid states they are challenging Israel's commitment to peace. The ads simply state the facts and are backed up with citations from credible human rights and international organizations, including the United Nations, said Chadi Salamon, the president of Ads Against Apartheid, who added that if the ads are shocking, that's because the reality on the ground is shocking. Ads Against Apartheid is planning to expand the campaign to other cities all across America. The campaign has other hard-hitting ads up on their website, too, instructing readers to stop talking, start acting, and support spreading the campaigns. Check out adsagainstapartheid.com on the internet. The recent wave of arrests, attacks, killings, and total closure of large parts of the West Bank following the disappearance of three Israeli settlers is a clear form of collective punishment against the Palestinian people. Since the disappearance of the three settlers on Thursday, the 12th of June, Israeli forces in Jalazoon refugee camp north of Ramallah have killed a Palestinian man, Ahmad Sabarin, age 20, and have arrested approximately 200 Palestinians across the West Bank. As the occupying power, Israel is obligated to carry out its search for the missing teens in line with its obligations under international humanitarian law and international human rights law. Although some of the measures carried out by the Israeli forces in large parts in the West Bank may have a link to the investigation into the disappearances, the methods employed are indiscriminate in their nature and are undermining the fundamental rights of the persons concerned. Furthermore, these restrictive measures are being carried out based on mere speculation regarding both the identity of those to impose punitive measures against large portions of the Palestinian population in violation of Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention, prohibiting reprisals against protected persons and their property, as well as collective punishment. For many years now, Israeli lobby groups such as the Anti-Defamation League, the Jewish Committee, and the Jewish Community Relations Committee have sponsored free trips to Israel for community leaders, legislators, and other local, state, and national government officials. The object of the trips is to promote Israel. More recently, the focus has been on offering free trips to college students, campus leaders, and student government members. Literally millions of dollars are spent on these junkets to counter what these Jewish lobbying groups see as a major threat from organizations such as Students for a Just Peace in Palestine, the SJP, Jewish Voice for Peace, and other peace and justice organizations forming on campuses across the country, which are exposing and challenging Israel's brutal occupation of Palestine. Increasingly, the Palestinian narrative is being portrayed on campuses, and the lies and myths of the Jewish narrative are being challenged with fact-based campaigns. Campuses are also ground zero for many boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaigns, which Zionists are increasingly recognizing as the most serious threat to Israel's domination and occupation of the Palestinian people. At the center of the BDS and campus organizing is journalist and author Ali Abu Nima. The feature presentation this week is a speech Abu Nima gave at Rutgers University this past May. He speaks about the campus and BDS organizing campaigns, including the one at Northeastern, where the chapter of Students for a Just Peace in Palestine was censored and suspended for its campaign to expose the massive enduring demolition of Palestinian homes by the Israeli military. This is known as blaming the victim, and Northeastern did it in a big way this past spring. Although it has backed away from the threatened student suspensions as well as a suspension of Northeastern's SJP. Here is Ali Abu Nima doing what he does best, speaking to and rallying college students.
It happens to be Israeli Apartheid Week, or really what has become Israeli Apartheid Month, where Students for Justice in Palestine and other organizations are educating their peers on campus about Israel's violations of the rights of Palestinians and the Palestinian struggle for those rights. And inevitably, these efforts, which I'll say more about, are generating a really strong backlash, a really repressive backlash on some campuses trying to silence and shut down the work that students are doing. And this, you've experienced this to some extent here at Rutgers in New Brunswick. Just a few months ago, last fall, SJP here was put under investigation after members distributed mock eviction notices. Who knows what a mock eviction notice is? Who heard about that issue here at Rutgers? That's quite a few people, but for those who hadn't heard of it, this is a tactic that students have been using all over the country to educate campuses where, you know, they want to bring some of the reality, albeit in a symbolic way, to campus of what Palestinians go through. So since 1967, Israel has demolished 27,000 Palestinian homes, and these demolitions are going on. And they're going on in the context of Israel's relentless theft of Palestinian land to build illegal Israeli settlements. And many Palestinians are made homeless, and this is happening in Jerusalem. It's a continuation of the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. So sometimes families, Palestinian families, in fact, almost every night, the Israeli army is raiding villages around the occupied West Bank and giving families eviction notices or demolition notices, saying, you have to get out of your house or you have to get off this land. We're going to demolish your home. We're going to take it. And so these mock eviction notices are simply flyers which lay out these facts, and they are just that. They're not real eviction notices. They're mock eviction notices just so students will see what life is like for Palestinians. So I actually have here, you wouldn't be able to see it because it's too small, the mock eviction notice that was distributed here at Rutgers. And it just lays out the facts that this may seem like unrealistically harsh treatment. It says, eviction notice, we regret to inform you that your suite is scheduled for demolition in the next 3 days. If you do not vacate the premise within this time frame, we reserve the right to destroy all your remaining belongings. You know, but then it says that it's fake, that they're just trying to dramatize what real life is like for Palestinians. It's a stunt. It's a way to get people's attention. So what happened at Rutgers is that there were complaints that, which turned out to be completely false, they were investigated by the university, that these notices had specifically targeted Jewish students. That wasn't true. But this is a diverse campus, and that's one of the beautiful things about it. And so, of course, there are Jewish students, and so they might have got some notices just like everyone else under the door of their dorm room. The university actually said, because I asked them and they sent me a statement at the time, that the notices were distributed randomly. It was simply untrue that Jewish students had been targeted. But the claim was made by Hillel, a nationwide organization with chapters on campus, whose main purpose seems to be to advocate against Palestinian rights. And they made this claim that these notices, which are fake and are simply informing students about what is going on in real life for Palestinians, made Jewish students on campus feel unsafe. Now, I think we have to take that very seriously, because what does it mean when an organization claims that if a Jewish student is informed about the facts of what Israel is actually doing to Palestinians, that they feel offended or unsafe? I think that that makes a very biased assumption that all Jewish students identify with Israel and that all Jewish students are somehow responsible for or associated with what Israel does, which is absolutely false. And I would even go as far as to say it's anti-Semitic. It's anti-Semitic to assume that someone is offended by accurate facts about Israel just because they're Jewish. But that's the claim that Hillel made. And the reason I am going into this detail about what happened at Rutgers is because at the time, and this was last October, one of the rabbis associated with Hillel, Rabbi Akiva David Weiss, said something that I really talk about in the book, which is that we have a free speech emergency on campuses when it comes to Israel. And what happened at Northeastern University is a precedent. I think the fact that Hillel had called for Rutgers SJP to be banned, to be disbanded, indicates that this is a goal, that this is a goal of organizations like Hillel, which is to get Students for Justice in Palestine shut down. And I want to draw your attention to the action alert put out by Northeastern SJP, calling on people everywhere, but especially other SJPs, to show solidarity, to send them letters, and to contact President Joseph Aoun of Northeastern University and let the administration there know that this is outrageous. This attack on free speech is absolutely unacceptable. And some good news came today that the university has apparently backed off from the threats to possibly expel the two students. But that doesn't mean the crisis is over, because the SJP is still banned. And if they get away with this, then maybe next time it will happen at Rutgers. And so it's really important to stand up against it and stand together against it. Now, one implication of this is I'm scheduled. It's of course, to me, what's happening to the students is the main thing, what they're being put through. But right now, I'm scheduled on April 1st to be at Northeastern. And right now, I don't know what this means. When a student organization is banned, it means they can't book a room. They can't get funding to have an event. So does that mean that I have been banned from Northeastern University now? Does that mean that it's impossible to have speakers to come on campus to tell the truth about what's happening in Palestine? It's this serious. And in the book, I talk about why this is happening. It's happening because Israel and pro-Israel organizations in this country have decided, they actually say the following. I quote from an organization called the David Project. This is a major pro-Israel organization that focuses on suppressing Palestine solidarity activism on campus. And they published a kind of a strategic paper in 2012 where they, in a sense, laid out their battle plan. And I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs from the book that kind of give you a context for the discussion that we're going to have. And just before I do that, a little bit more context. In 2010, a think tank in Israel that's very close to the Israeli government and military called the Re'ut Institute. The name's not important, it's in the book. But what is important is that this think tank put forward a plan, and they said that Israel faces a threat that is almost more dangerous than missiles, more dangerous than Iran. We know that Iran actually has no nuclear weapons despite the Israeli propaganda. But in the minds of Israelis and in the propaganda that's fed to the Israeli public, Iran is this huge danger. So they're saying this is as big as Iran. It's the existential threat to Israel from the growing global Palestine solidarity movement. And we have to move to stop it. The words they used is we need to sabotage and attack it. We have to name and shame and discredit the organizations and even the individuals who are in this movement. And in the book I outline how millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, have been devoted to this effort by groups like, something called the Israel Action Network, which was set up by the Jewish Federations of North America, by a group called Stand With Us that works very closely with the Israeli government, and a whole host of other groups. And Hillel, at the national level, is very involved in that. And 4 years in, the BDS movement is bigger than ever. So in one sense, you can say they failed. But on the other hand, we can see that these organizations, with the banning of Northeastern SJP, with the censorship going on at Columbia University right now during Israeli Apartheid Week and other cases around the country, the effort to stop people talking about Palestine on campus is really intense. So I'll read this little bit. American public support for Israel remains strong, but the growing cracks in that support are most evident on campus, according to the David Project. And universities across America form, quote, the leading venue for anti-Israel activity and the spread of anti-Israelism. The case for working to stop this dangerous trend is clear. According to the David Project, universities are not only where the thinking of America's future political leaders is molded, but also where the worldview of a large swath of influential people outside of the political class, as well as the population at large, is formed. These warnings are contained in the David Project's 2012 white paper, A Burning Campus, Rethinking Israel Advocacy at America's Universities and Colleges. This document can be seen as the university-focused counterpart of the Re'ut Institute's blueprint for suppressing Palestine solidarity activism and criticism of Israel more broadly. The David Project, a $4 million per year organization focusing on Zionist advocacy on campuses, was founded in 2002 and became notorious in the early 2000s for its witch hunt against Columbia University professor Joseph Mashad, as well as its aggressively Islamophobic rhetoric. Incidentally, the founder of the David Project is the person behind the group that has been relentlessly harassing Northeastern University, and a guy called Charles Jacobs, who is not only virulently anti-Palestinian, but very openly Islamophobic as well. The white paper criticizes earlier approaches to suppressing Palestine solidarity activism and academic inquiry related to Israel on campus and lays out a new framework. The old approach involved confronting and debating. The new strategy, directly inspired by the Re'ut Institute report which I just talked about, emphasizes making friends and influencing people. Surprisingly, the paper demolishes the notion, long promoted by Zionist groups, that American college campuses are rife with anti-Semitism. Most American campuses are not hostile environments for most Jewish students, the paper acknowledges. Racial anti-Semitism of the kind most associated with the Nazis is not likely a serious problem on any American college campus. Claiming otherwise does not jive with the lived experience of many Jewish students who know they can identify as Jews and largely not suffer any. I have a chapter in here which is titled, Does Israel Have a Right to Exist as a Jewish State? I'm not going to give away the answer. I don't want to give away any plot spoilers. You'll have to read it and find out what the answer to that question is. However, the key points that I make are that Israel's demand to have a right to exist as a Jewish state and that Palestinians should accept it means that Palestinians should accept that it was legitimate for Palestinians to be expelled from their country in 1948, that it's legitimate for Israel to deny Palestinians the right to return to their country for one reason and one reason alone, which is that they're not Jewish, that it is legitimate for Israel to keep 1.7 million Palestinians caged up in Gaza, 80% of them refugees from areas that are now in Israel, solely because they're not Jewish, that it is legitimate for Israel to continue to discriminate against the 1.5 million Palestinians who are citizens of Israel, albeit second-class citizens. So you can actually have a very rational discussion about what it means in practice for Israel to claim that it has a right to exist as a Jewish state. And I argue that it means in practice recognizing that Israel has a right to be racist against Palestinians. What I'm telling you now and what I write in the book fits the David Project's definition of anti-Israelism and bigotry. To discuss the impact of Israel's policies on Palestinians, according to them, is bigotry. And how do we see this playing out? We see it playing out with what happened at Rutgers and what's happening now at Northeastern. That if you provide a flyer to people telling them the undeniable fact that 27,000 Palestinian homes have been demolished since 1967, that you're a bigot, and that you should be subjected to disciplinary proceedings, and that you should be brought up before the same kind of procedures that are rightly reserved for racist incidents, racist harassment, sexual harassment, and other forms of abuse that are unacceptable. The effort is to define criticism of Israel as bigotry for which you should be punished. This is why it's absolutely fundamental that we really stand up against this effort to shut down free speech. And another point I want to add on this that my colleague Abe Greenhouse has made repeatedly is that sometimes university administrations will say, well, you know, we can't ban people from speaking, but we acknowledge that what these Students for Justice in Palestine groups are saying is extreme and is offensive. But the mark of us as democratic societies is that we tolerate all sorts of horrible things. So even though these Palestinians and their supporters are saying horrible things, we good liberals must tolerate it because we're so tolerant. Did I get that right, Abe? Well, we have to absolutely resist this and be very forceful about who is saying the repugnant things. Because what Palestinians are advocating and what Students for Justice in Palestine are advocating and what the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions movement and those who support it are advocating is fundamentally based in universal rights, in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, in recognizing the inherent worth and equality of all human beings. We are the ones defending liberal values. We are the ones defending human rights. And those who support Israel as a Jewish state, and those who support Zionism, are the ones saying repugnant things. And let me give you an example of that. I'm not going to give you, although you can find them in the book, you can find examples of extreme Israeli racism against Palestinians. That's really ugly stuff. That's not what I'm going to read you. I'm going to read you something from the most mainstream, the most acceptable, the people, you know, the kind of person you'll see on on MSNBC and CNN every day. Has anyone ever heard of somebody called Peter Beinart? I'm happy to see very few of you have, because there's really no reason you should know who this guy is. What he says is not very interesting, and he's not interested in hearing from you. He doesn't really talk to Palestinians and those who support their rights. But he is notable because he wrote a book called The Crisis of Zionism a couple of years ago. And it got a lot of media and a lot of press. And his basic argument was that, you know, the older generation of leaders of pro-Israel Jewish communal organizations in the United States, groups like the Anti-Defamation League, AIPAC, the American Jewish Committee, and so on, are really losing the younger generation of American Jews. Because, you know, American Jews in this country, American Jewish communities, have been in the forefront of civil rights, always. They were in the forefront of the struggle against Jim Crow in this country. They've been staunch defenders of separation of church and state, and protecting freedom of religion by preventing one religion from taking over the state, as many Christianist radicals in this country would like to see. But when it comes to Israel, the approach has largely been Israel right or wrong, and cheerleading for massacres when, you know, there was almost no dissent when Israel was massacring people in Gaza. Constant cheerleading. And so what Peter Beinart is saying is that young American Jews, just like young Americans of every background, when forced to choose between the kind of racism that they see in Israel and the pluralistic values that they grow up with in the United States, choose the pluralism. And they're not supporting Israel. And this is the crisis of Zionism. That is a very bold and even careless statement when we reflect on the enormity of what Palestinians continue to go through and what so many people in the region continue to go through, from Iraq to Syria to Palestine, Gaza, and with the brutal coup regime in Egypt as well. But what I mean there is that the Palestinians really are winning the argument in this country. And this country is the key in many respects, because Israel exists largely thanks to support from the United States and because of the United States' hegemonic or imperial role in the region. So I have to say I agree fundamentally with the David Project when they say that what is happening on campuses in this country is crucial to the future of what happens in Palestine and future and crucial to American support. What I also hope that this book offers is, well, for me it was very much a learning experience, that I had to understand in writing this book that American support for Israel, the ability of American politicians to tolerate and even, you know, celebrate Israel's violations of Palestinian rights to celebrate and support Israeli, push myself to be as empathetic as possible to the quote-unquote other side, to put myself in their shoes and to see if I could build that bridge. And I stand by it. The reaction to it was exactly the same as, you know, if I'm combative, is to call me an anti-Semite and to say I want to destroy Israel and I'm a terrorist and to wish that they would blow myself up. These are things I hear every day in social media. So, in a sense, I feel you should say what you think. Say it with dignity. Say it with accuracy. Don't let them ruffle you. Don't let them set the agenda. But don't feel that you have to be shy about the truth. And the point you make about people wanting to dismiss what we say as noise, I hear that and I think that's a problem. If this is seen as, you know, a squabble between two ethnic groups or two religious groups, I think the reaction will be, you know, we don't want anything to do with that. And it's been actually a deliberate strategy. Now, maybe you'll say I'm being combative, but it's the truth. Which is, it's been a deliberate strategy of pro-Israel groups to try to present this issue as, oh, it's a religious issue. Because the advantage for them is exactly that, that it turns other people off. And if it's an ancient religious issue that goes back thousands of years, then, well, nothing can be done. We'll just have to have dialogue groups and interfaith sessions and go on and on and on. But if people understand this as apartheid, as settler colonialism, as injustice of one group dominating another group of people, then something can be done. Now, probably many people in this room are too young to remember the campus divestment campaigns against South Africa, although I know that many of you have read and studied about it. I remember it. And I think that it's easy for us to think that, you know, in hindsight, everybody must have supported sanctions against South Africa, right? Because who could possibly have been willing to collaborate with a white minority regime oppressing millions of black people? But the reality was, apartheid South Africa had a lot of support in the United States. The Reagan administration strongly opposed sanctions on South Africa. U.S. corporations strongly opposed sanctions on South Africa. And you know what? They made all the same arguments people now make against sanctions, boycott, or divestment on Israel. They say, oh, well, sanctions, you know, BDS, it cuts off dialogue, hurts people's feelings. It hurts the people it's supposed to help because, you know, Palestinians or African, they used to say black people at the time, will lose jobs if companies withdraw from South Africa. That investment is good, that economic development helps everyone. These were all arguments that were made. Universities absolutely resisted divestment on South Africa. Students and faculty who supported them had to work really hard to get universities to divest from South Africa. There were no easy victories. And I think what's amazing is how much faster the BDS campaign targeting Israel has grown and how much more success it's had in a short time compared with South Africa. The first calls for boycott of South Africa were issued by black South Africans in the 1950s. But it took until the 1980s, 30 years, for it to become mainstream in Europe and the United States. The Palestinian campaign for boycott, divestment, and sanctions was launched in 2005. So we're talking about 8 years ago, and we're already getting incredible mainstream attention and traction. And one of the key goals of BDS is to change the discussion, to bring the focus back to Palestinian rights, and that is what's happening. So I don't want to make it sound like it's going to be easy. It's not. But it means something when Israeli ministers are saying this is the greatest threat Israel faces. Almost every day we're hearing about another European bank or pension fund pulling out of Israeli investments. So I think that in comparison with South Africa, we're doing well.
That was journalist and author Ali Abu Nima speaking at Rutgers University. And that is all the time we have this week. Please join us every week at 8 a.m. Sunday morning for This Week in Palestine. We will try to keep you informed and engaged in the enduring struggle to bring a just solution for the Palestinian people and their struggle to end the Israeli occupation. If you miss us on Sunday morning or want to hear past broadcasts of This Week in Palestine, we urge you to go to our archive, created and maintained by our colleague Stan Robinson, who faithfully archives each episode each week. It is easy to access the archive. Just go to www.truthandjusticeradio.com. That is truthandjusticeradio.com. Click on the archive for This Week in Palestine right on the homepage, and you will be presented with a list of past broadcasts with a description of the content of each program. This is a real labor of love for Stan, and we appreciate his commitment to archiving our broadcasts. Again, www.truthandjusticeradio.com. It is a marvelous archive. Give it a try. You are tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM, Newton, Massachusetts. And this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.